Welcome to episode 422 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard, and Richard is away this week. He couldn't join us. He's traveling, and well, you know how traveling can be. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And tonight, we are joined by a very special guest, and I think a fan favorite of the show. Tonight, we have Rob H. of the AV Rant podcast, amongst other things, I'm sure. But Rob, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Josh. I'm really happy to be back. Always have a great time when we're on this podcast. Going to talk some home theater PC stuff, which don't get to talk a ton about on AV Rant. Just for folks who might be hearing my voice for the first time on this podcast, AV Rant is a podcast where we answer home theater and AV-related questions. So people send us questions, we answer them on the show. That's pretty much all we do. We sprinkle in a little bit of news at the very beginning, but it's like 2 hours of question and answer, all home theater stuff. So if somebody asks about home theater PCs, we're certainly happy to answer, but haven't had a ton of those lately, so excited to talk about them here.
Yeah, well, and for anybody who hasn't listened to AV Rant yet, if you ever have any questions at all about TVs, projectors, receivers, speakers, especially subwoofers. They love their subwoofers. Anything. How to set up a home theater, you know, where to place things within your room. All of that stuff is covered on AV Rant. And these guys, you and Tom, are absolute experts in this area. And you never treat anybody like idiots. Even people like me who have, I feel like, not very much knowledge in that space. And everything that I have learned, I've learned from you guys.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words. You're far from anything even resembling an ID10T error. So yeah, we Tom and I, when we went, AV Rant wasn't always all question and answer, but when we switched over to that format, one of the things we really wanted to do was not be like the forums. You know, forums like AVS Forum have fantastic information. If you have the persistence and patience to wade through the hundreds upon hundreds of posts to find what you're looking for, right, and then already have the knowledge to know what's the right information and what isn't, you know, that's a lot of filtering you might have to do on your own. And the one thing that we hated the most was when someone would ask a good question and the only reply they would get is, well, that was already answered 200 pages ago. Why don't you use the search function and look it up for yourself? We're like, right. Ask us. We don't care if you, we literally don't care if someone asks us the same question 5 weeks in a row because they need it explained five different ways before it clicks for them. That is fine. So anything you want to ask us, we don't care if it's been asked before, ask it again. That's what we're here to do. So we hope that comes across as welcoming. We are sarcastic people. We do like to rib our listeners as though they're our best friends because that's how we show affection. So don't get too upset about that, hopefully, but we answer everything that gets sent to us. So, yeah.
Well, and last little plug from me for your show is for anyone who might have missed last week's episode of Entertainment 2.0, I had a receiver issue recently and where I needed to replace my receiver. And so I thought I knew what to do, but I figured, you know, I know two of the smartest dudes in the industry about all this. I'm going to email AV Rant. And you guys gave me a phenomenal answer. And I ended up buying exactly what you told me to buy. And I'm very, very happy.
Oh, well, very happy to hear that. Yeah. Yeah. It's that's the whole idea. And I don't really have any credentials. Like, I don't have any formal education or own an AV business or anything like that. So all I have going for me in terms of giving recommendations is, does it actually work? And so if it doesn't work, then nobody's really going to listen to anything I have to say. So very happy to hear that that worked out for you.
It did quite well. All right. Well, normally we would start off the show with some listener feedback. We don't have any this week. Like, that's probably okay. I think the show will probably generate some. Plus, this could already end up being a long show anyway. So no reason to fill it up with lots of feedback if we don't have any. If you'd like to send us some for next week, you can shoot us an email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So also, normally we would start with the featured content and then do the rest of the news later. We're going to quick hit on some of this news first and then get into all of the meaty goodness that Rob is going to share with all of us. So unfortunately, like if you're not into gaming, the only little bit of news that we have this week is gaming, because there's just not a lot going on right now as we prepare for the fall onslaught of everything else in the industry. So, well, and leading up to, of course, CES in January. So on the gaming side, today, Microsoft announced that they have promoted the Xbox head, Phil Spencer. His new title is now Executive Vice President. Now, if you're worried that that means he's not an Xbox anymore, that's not the case. He's still the Xbox chief. He's just now got even more of a say in what's going on at Microsoft. This is basically by putting Phil Spencer on the senior leadership team, this is basically Microsoft saying, yeah, this whole gaming thing, it's really important. And maybe we should take an even bigger look at how what Microsoft is doing in the space matters and how it impacts the rest of Microsoft as a whole, and then focus more on what they're doing across that industry. So Phil Spencer has been wonderful for the Xbox division since he took the helm a couple of years ago. I think this is fantastic news.
Yeah, it seems, you know, there's a lot more integration. Satya Nadella seems to have really been focusing on getting all the somewhat disparate parts of Microsoft talking to one another, at least at the highest level, right? So that, you know, what's happening in gaming on Windows is going to work well with what's happening in gaming on Xbox, is going to work well with what's happening with gaming on mobile. And, you know, instead of having sort of these little silos of people now, 16 members on a senior leadership team starts to sound like a slightly unwieldy number to me. That's, I don't know if they still, you know, have some sort of inter-office chat or group emails or whatever, however they're choosing to communicate, but 16 members seems like it might be a lot of heads, you know, saying, popping up on different topics. But we'll see what the end result is, right, having a leadership team that large. But it's an interesting move, and congrats to Phil Spencer on his promotion, I guess he would say.
Absolutely. Most of the rest of the real in-depth Xboxy gaming news, I think, is kind of frankly, I don't think there's going to be a ton more of it this year. That, you know, in the gaming space, the fourth quarter tends to just be, let's put out all the games. And yeah, of course, this year Microsoft is releasing a brand new console in the, yes, Xbox One X. So other than that, I don't think we're going to get a ton of big gaming news. So we just want to share with you guys some deals for the rest of the gaming news this week. And that, of course, is this week's gold, deals with gold and spotlight sale. This is a better week. You know, there's a lot of games on here that maybe you haven't played, and now might not be a bad time to check them out. So it seems like basically every Battlefield game that's been on Xbox One is on sale, or it's DLC. All of that is on sale right now. Same is true with the Far Cry series, Far Cry 4, Far Cry Primal. All of those are on sale. But my pick here has got to be Overwatch. Overwatch Game of the Year Edition is on sale. It's still $38, which kind of seems like a lot for a 1.5-year-old game going on sale. But Overwatch is so good. It's so good. I was just at work today trying to convince somebody that he should buy this. So those are my picks, but there's, of course, a lot of other things on sale this week. Rob, I know you're a little bit of a gamer. Did any of these titles jump out at you as particularly good deals?
I wish I could game more. I mean, it's strictly a matter of time for me. It's not a lack of desire. It's the same with, you know, television and movies. I mean, I'm a home theater guy. I want to watch everything. There's tons of good TV and movies and tons of great games. It's I don't know where all the time goes exactly, but unfortunately, I just haven't. I'm still mostly playing Left 4 Dead 2, which of course is an Xbox 360 game, right, but that's what my Xbox One gets used for most, because it's about the only somewhat competitive game where I have any chance of competing at all, just because of familiarity. If I were to jump into Overwatch at this point, I'd just be getting slaughtered. So that's not a ton of fun when I only have very limited time to play. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, oh yeah. I completely understand. All right. Well, deals are great, but free games are even better. And it is the second half of September now. So we've got some new free games through the Games with Gold program. Of course, the Xbox side is always weird in their scheduling. So you can continue to get Forza Motorsport 5 for free on Xbox One. And then you now have access to Oxenfree. I really enjoyed that game. So it's kind of a love it or hate it sort of game, but it's only like 4 hours long and it's free. So there's no reason not to check out Oxenfree. And then on the Xbox 360 side, if paying less money for all of those Battlefield games is still too much, you can get another Battlefield game for free. That's Battlefield 3. And of course, that is also backwards compatible if you're only playing on an Xbox One. That's kind of it for news, guys. And that's okay, because the rest of this, I think, is going to be really, really good. So we've got a whole lot of questions that we wanted to ask Rob. He's not only like a general home theater guru, he is my go-to guy for what the heck is going on with 4K and HDR. So we're going to start there, because we had you on about a year ago to talk about where HDR was and what TVs we might want to be looking at. And it seemed like at that point, maybe the whole HDR standards thing was starting to calm down. And that was totally wrong, because we have more HDR standards now. So why don't we start with HDR? Because you and I both agree that 4K is okay. But the thing that makes these new TVs really good is high dynamic range video. So what's going on with the standards now?
Okay, so we had two big consumer electronics shows over the past couple of weeks. There was IFA in Berlin, which is the international radio show that that takes place in Germany. And then we had CEDIA, the Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association show, where normally we're looking out for the new projectors and that. And there was some pretty big news from Sony in that regard, with bringing the prices down on genuine 4K resolution projectors for the home. First one down at $5,000. So that's a price break right there. But the other sort of big news was all this talk about a new HDR standard called HDR 10 Plus, which was developed by Samsung, but now has Panasonic and 20th Century Fox joined together in what they're calling the HDR 10 Plus partnership. It's being referred to as the HDR 10 Plus Alliance by a lot of places, but the official name they were throwing around at IFA and CEDIA was partnership, so I don't really know what all that is. But the sort of like header of what that is an alternative to Dolby Vision. So to give a little refresher, we have this sort of base layer at this point of HDR that we call HDR 10. And that uses this one particular curve. They call it an EOTF, an electro-optical transfer function. And that's just a fancy way of saying we have 1,024 values available to us because we're using 10-bit video. So there's 1,024 values. And each one of those values is linked directly to a specific nit light output level. And that's the curve. And Dolby are actually the ones who developed that curve, called the perceptual quantizer, or PQ for short. And HDR 10 uses that curve and then throws some metadata on there. And the metadata just says, what's the brightest thing in this entire movie? And what is the average light level of this entire movie? And with those two pieces of metadata, your HDR 10 television is supposed to do what they call tone mapping, which is if it can't reach that very brightest thing, well, it makes it as bright as the TV can. And then it shifts everything down. Everything else is made just a little bit dimmer so that you retain all the detail that you're supposed to see in that image. So that's HDR 10. Well, Dolby Vision is what they call dynamic metadata, where they do that same thing, the same information. What's the brightest thing and what's the average light level? But they do it on a scene by scene or even a frame by frame basis. Still uses the same PQ curve, but now Dolby has their metadata on top of it on up to a frame by frame basis. Well, HDR 10 Plus is the exact same idea as Dolby Vision, dynamic metadata on a scene by scene or frame by frame basis, but different metadata. Right? Your HDR 10 decoder can't understand it. Your Dolby Vision decoder can't understand it. You'd need a new decoder, an HDR 10 Plus decoder. Oh, so that's, Yeah, it's the same idea. Now, their whole thing is it's royalty-free. Dolby Vision, Dolby charges a royalty. HDR10 is completely open. Everybody can throw it on there, and everyone has. That's why it's become basically this base layer that we expect from everything. But HDR10 Plus is royalty-free. Now, they said there's a nominal licensing fee that any manufacturer will have to pay in order to put an HDR10 Plus decoder into their device, so it's not completely free to manufacturers. But other than that, they're not paying on a release-by-release basis like they are with Dolby Vision. So is it good? Is it bad? It's tough to say. It's not part of the Blu-ray Discs Association's specifications for Ultra HD Blu-ray at this point. Panasonic has been going around saying, oh, we think it'll happen by the end of the year because they want to show off HDR 10 Plus players at CES in January. Well, some people interviewed members of the Blu-ray Disc Association at IFA, and they're like, yeah, that's that might be optimistic, getting it done by the end of the year. They're like, there's a lot to evaluate. None of the chips exist yet, so I don't know how you add a standard to something without the decoder chips even being in existence. That seems like a challenge.
Right.
And so why is sort of like why another standard outside of the royalty free, right? Why is Fox on board with this? Why Samsung and Panasonic are on board with this? Well, the thing that a lot of the manufacturers, or at least those two manufacturers, don't particularly like about Dolby Vision outside of having to pay Dolby a royalty is that Dolby gets all of their information.
Oh.
All of the information on how they make that display. Dolby gets all of that, and Dolby mandates very strictly what the settings for that television has to be when it's in Dolby Vision mode. They're like, this is the light it's going to output. This is the way you're going to map the colors. Because one of the interesting things about high dynamic range is, let's say you just take a particular shade of red, and then you make that same shade of red brighter, or you make that same shade of red darker. When it gets brighter, our eye tends to see it as a lighter shade of red. Even though it's the same shade, it looks a little bit lighter to us. When it gets dark, when it gets dimmer, it looks like a darker shade. So Dolby has worked out sort of the compensation curves to say, if we want that shade of red to always look like the same shade of red, even though it's getting dimmer and brighter, here's the curve that we, Dolby, apply to that to make that happen. Well, Samsung and Panasonic both famously like to do their own coloring. Panasonic's like, we have our Hollywood color studios. Samsung's like, we work hand in hand with Joe Kane and some other color experts, and we know how to do color. We don't like Dolby telling us how to do color. We know how to do color. So we're going to have this new open standard. HDR 10 Plus is open. This new open standard, so we can do our own color. When it gets brighter, this is how we map it, not the Dolby way, our way, which should look the same, but that's kind of what they've been upset about. So okay. Yeah, HDR 10 Plus, that's been the big news. Will we see it? I mean, LG, for their part, they're like, hey, if it's in the market, we'll try to add it to our TVs. If it's physically possible, we'll do it. Oppo on the Blu-ray disc player side has said, if it's possible, we'll update our players to do it. But because the chips don't exist yet, because the licensing program doesn't exist yet, they don't know. So it's still wait and see.
So will HDR10 absolutely require new hardware, or is there any hope that the TVs that we have now might support HDR10 Plus?
So Panasonic has said some of their highest level existing 2017 models, they're like, they're going to support HDR10 Plus. Samsung already has some models that supposedly support it. It's like a software solution. Amazon has said they want to stream some content in it, but none of it exists yet. So there's really nothing to watch in the format yet. But those two companies have said, yeah, we should be able to update some of the existing 2017 televisions. Samsung has even said maybe some of their higher end 2016 models going forward into 2018, the models will all have it. But for all the other manufacturers who aren't part of this HDR10 Plus partnership yet, it's unknown. It's really unknown whether they'll want to and whether it will be possible to if they want to. It's right. There's a lot of unknowns, unfortunately.
So HDR10 Plus isn't even the only new one. I mean, at least it's not the newest one, or it's not the only new one since the last time you and I talked, because the last time you were on, I don't think hybrid log gamma was really a thing yet.
Yeah, it was it existed, but it hadn't really been completely shown, like, in a working manner. So HLG is hybrid log gamma. The whole idea there is it doesn't have any metadata at all. It's one signal. You throw it into any television, be it a standard dynamic range or a high dynamic range television. And the idea is that from 0 to 100 nits, which is our old standard dynamic range, range of brightness was from 0 to 100. It uses the same traditional gamma curve that all of our TVs up till now have been using this whole time. And then from 100 nits on up, it uses a logarithmic curve that should allow the television to better track the way our eye perceives light output. We need exponentially more and more light in order to notice a difference. So it switches to a different curve. Instead of the gamma curve, it goes to a logarithmic curve. So your standard dynamic range television just ignores that part of the signal. And a television that has an HLG decoder built into it goes, oh, okay, you're a hybrid log gamma signal. I know what to do with this curve. The idea is they want to use it for broadcasts, particularly live television broadcasts. Because how do you add metadata on a scene-by-scene basis on a live broadcast after you've already recorded the thing, right?
Right.
It's a little bit of a challenge.
That would be difficult.
Yeah, if it's live to tape, you could do it because there's a delay. But if it's literally a live broadcast, how do you add the metadata after the fact? So HLG is there primarily for live broadcast television. It's this one curve, no metadata. And they've shown it working in like prototype form. It seems to be a little bit of a bigger deal in Europe. It was developed by the BBC in partnership with NHK in Japan. So those are the big bodies behind it, but that's working now. LG televisions already support it. Sony televisions already support it. It looks like it's getting pretty wide support. It's in projectors, you're only getting HDR10, the base layer, and HLG. You're not getting this dynamic metadata for projectors because in projectors, you don't know what the max light output is going to be until you've installed the thing. So there's lots of challenges going on. But yeah, we've got that. And then Technicolor has their own HDR format as well, is another non-metadata system. So they're in there trying to sort of compete with HLG in a way. It's, is it okay to say it's a mess? What I really want to point people to is if Flat Panels HD, flatpanelshd.com is a website. Oh, they have a writer for there, Yori Gertzkins, who put a fantastic article together. It's very long. It's comprehensive and detailed, but it gives you a good example of if you're a consumer, why might you be confused by this HDR stuff? Well, maybe because it takes, what is this, like a 1500 word article or something, you know, to describe the situation. It's understandable if someone is confused, but right. Yeah, I know you put links right at the Digital Media Zone for stuff that you talk about on this show. So
yep.
You'll have a link there for that article.
So I guess to look at this from a super high level, like, right now, from what I understand, most UHD Blu-ray disc only support HDR10, and some of them have Dolby Vision, but not even very many, right?
That is correct. Yeah.
So yeah. None of these other formats are even on a disc yet.
No, and they're not part of the Ultra HD Blu-ray specification yet. Only those, well, technically three are. HDR, if you want to make it somewhat simple for yourself, HDR10 is like the thing that's on everything. Yeah. Every TV that's an HDR compatible TV, I put it except for the Vizio Reference Series, which was very, very early, but that's the only one. So let's kind of forget about them. Every TV that is called an HDR TV can do HDR10. On Ultra HD Blu-ray, HDR10 is mandatory. You have to have it.
Oh.
So it's there no matter what. You got HDR10. And this is why the HDR10 Plus partnership is saying there's no format war. We're not in a format war with Dolby Vision. Because let's say eventually you get a disc and it has HDR10 Plus on it. Well, by mandate, it also has HDR10 sitting underneath there. So it's HDR10 with HDR10 Plus on top of it. Now, you put that into a disc player or play it on a television that does not have an HDR10 Plus decoder, you still get HDR10. And okay. Same thing with Dolby Vision. You take a one of these Ultra HD Blu-ray discs that has Dolby Vision on it, you play it in a player or on a TV that doesn't have a Dolby Vision decoder, you still get HDR10. So they're saying it's not a format war, because even if there's a disc that only has HDR10 plus as the dynamic metadata version, and you play it on a Dolby Vision only television, well, you don't get the dynamic metadata, but you still get HDR10. It's not like taking a Blu-ray disc and putting it in an HD DVD player and nothing happens. That was a format war, right? You had to pick one or the other. This one, it's like, well, you don't get the full benefit unless you use our system, but you still get something. And it's still HDR, and it's HDR10.
Okay, so last HDR question for you then. with these standards still brewing, and we're not sure what's, you know, maybe we're going to end up with HLG for potential future live mm-hmm. broadcast stuff. Is now a good time or a bad time to buy an HDR TV?
I think it's a pretty okay time.
Pretty okay.
It's like they're gonna get brighter, all right? So right now, like, the LG OLED TVs are fantastic looking, but they still can't hit 1,000 nits, and it'd be really nice if they could, because then they wouldn't have to tone map the image very much, unless it's one of the ones that's been mastered to 4,000 nits, but then everything's having to tone map that now. So if they can get to 1,000 nits, that'll be a really nice thing, if we can get some of these standards to settle down a bit. And look, this is purely my opinion. Please don't take this as anything to do with the industry. I'm kind of hoping HDR 10 Plus just doesn't go anywhere, because why do we need it? and what was interesting, I mean, I know we talk about Microsoft on this podcast, but, you know, occasionally you mentioned some Apple news, and they had their mm-hmm. big event and yeah. their 4K Apple TV. And what they did on iTunes, you know, with the movies, that they're now offering some movies in 4K resolution over on iTunes. And they upgraded, like, if you already owned one of those movies in the HD version, they upgraded it to the 4K version for free. So that's mm-hmm. that's pretty nice. It just shows up in your account. There, out of the 160 or so 4K movies that they have, half of them have Dolby Vision, which is actually more than Ultra HD Blu-ray discs. Right. Yeah. So that's a little bit strange. And then the other half, there's a small number of them, I think about 15 or so, that have HDR 10. And then the remainder have no HDR of any kind. They're just 4K resolution. That's what's happened over at iTunes. But you'll notice that as far as HDR goes, Dolby Vision is the clear favorite when it comes to what's being released right now in HDR, at least on iTunes. It's the only HDR system being used in actual movie theaters, in Dolby Cinemas, which, if you go out to a commercial movie theater, that's the only way you're going to see high dynamic ranges in a Dolby Cinema, and those are all Dolby Vision. Every studio, including Fox and Disney, is making their movies in Dolby Vision when they're releasing them for the theaters. So it's already pretty pervasive.
Right. Like,
can we maybe just settle on HDR10 and Dolby Vision? That's one man's opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So what about Dolby Vision? What sorts of devices support it? And I want to start off with, what about the Xbox One S that so many people have? And what about the Xbox One X that's coming in just about a month and a half?
So far, those don't support Dolby Vision. So far, the only streaming device that supports Dolby Vision, and this is one is going to be a little bit funny, it's the Chromecast Ultra. Like, out of everything that's out there, that is the only streaming device that supports Dolby Vision. Now, that's with the caveat of some of the built-in streaming like applications that you'd find on the televisions themselves. Mm-hmm. So TCL, LG, Vizio, they support Dolby Vision on their built-in streaming apps. But as far as a box that you could buy to add to any television, the Chromecast Ultra is presently the only one. There's no real technical reason why Xbox One S and Xbox One X shouldn't be able to add Dolby Vision to it. So that's something to go over to Xbox User Voice and vote on that, because there is a topic there for it. Like, tell Microsoft you want them to add Dolby Vision support, because those two boxes are Ultra HD Blu-ray players. There are Ultra HD Blu-ray discs with Dolby Vision on them now. Let's get this going for the Xbox. You know, make your voice heard. But yeah, as far as television, like, honestly, if I'm giving advice as AV Rant host, what TV to go look for, I'm like, try to get yourself an LG. Like, LG OLEDs look fantastic, but they're expensive, but they support every form of HDR. If you're not going to get that, if you want the least expensive, try to get a Vizio M or P series, because again, they're supporting more formats than the other brands in the lower price ranges. And then if you just want a really, really good LCD, look at some of the higher end Sonys, the Sony X930 and 940E, or their Z9D, I'm Canadian, threw in the Z there. Got out of me. But yeah, Z9D, which actually is the only 4K HDR Dolby Vision TV that you can buy that still does 3D. Haha, how about that? Unfortunately, it's not very good. It's not very good 3D, but it's the only one that even does it. Everybody else killed 3D completely.
And that makes Rob very sad.
A little bit. I mean, hey, I built a 3D library, so, you know, now they're becoming useless to me.
Okay, so, all right, so I guess we're just hoping that more and more of those devices are going to continue to support Dolby Vision. Now, you mentioned that iTunes, a bunch of their movies have Dolby Vision, so is the new 4K Apple TV also going to support Dolby Vision then?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's the other streaming box that'll do Dolby Vision now. As much as we talk about video and HDR whenever I come on this podcast, I do consider myself more of an audio guy, and I am ticked off at Apple right now. Because Apple, for whatever reason, has decided, hey, you got this new Apple TV 4K. Why would you want the latest audio to go along with the latest video? All you want is Dolby Digital 5.1, right? Like, all you want is the same audio that the old Apple TV had, because that's what they've done.
Right, yeah. Do you think that's because they think that if you cared that much about audio and frankly video, that you wouldn't be streaming? That you would be using a Blu-ray or an Ultra HD Blu-ray?
I think it's just an oversight. I mean, I don't know, but I think it's just an oversight. I think it didn't cross their minds. They didn't mention the audio capabilities at all at their Apple event. It wasn't even in their minds. Okay. So I mean, the other thing is, of course, they tend to care more about their mobile platforms. So are you going to be listening to lossless object-based Atmos audio on your iPhone? No, you're not.
right.
So that could be part of it as well, right? They're like, hey, these movies need to play on all of our devices. So why do we care about, you know, object-based 11 speaker audio? Yeah, but I don't really know, you know? It's tough to tell. Netflix has started to support Atmos. Vudu supports Atmos. So why iTunes can't do it, I have no idea.
Okay, so speaking of Atmos, the other thing that I think people get really tripped up over with all of these different technology standards in video and audio, and this one kind of crosses both, is ARC, which stands for audio return channel. And I'm going to try and take a stab here at explaining what ARC is. And then you can laugh and point and make fun of me and tell us what it is.
I don't think that'll happen.
It's not that complicated, though, for as dumb of a name as it is. So you have an HDMI cable going between your receiver and your TV. And most people think of these cables as being one direction. It's sending the video up to the TV from your receiver. But it actually goes both ways. And if you're running video apps on, it's typically from apps on your TV, but it could be from other devices connected to your TV. If they have audio, it can send the audio back down the HDMI cable to the receiver so that all of that audio still comes out of your speakers that are hooked up to your receiver. Does ARC support Atmos?
What a complicated answer. how shall I say it? Well, there is no good way to give a short answer, so I'll just jump into the long one. So ARC came about not even because of built-in streaming apps. It came about because of the idea that you might connect an over-the-air antenna to your television.
Right.
And then how do you get the sound into your surround sound system? So that was the origin of the audio return channel. It was really all about the over-the-air antenna. And then when they started putting built-in streaming apps into the television, of course, it served its purpose there as well. Now, the original audio return channel, which goes over your HDMI cable, All it was meant to do was send the exact same audio that you might get from your over-the-air antenna, which meant two-channel PCM or 5.1 Dolby Digital. You add 5.1 DTS to that, and you have the formats that were supported by the old optical or digital coax audio connections. Those were the formats you could send. You could only send up to two channels of PCM. You couldn't send multi-channel PCM. And 5.1 vanilla Dolby Digital or DTS. That was the original audio return channel. Now, they figured out, hey, this is still a big fat pipe. There's tons of bandwidth in here. If we just have the ability to program the audio chip in the television to send some other audio formats, there's no bandwidth restriction on why we couldn't do that. So actually, one of the best clues is to go over to Netflix, because now that Netflix has a few Atmos titles, in their section of how do I watch your Netflix Atmos titles, like, here are the devices that support Atmos from Netflix. The Xbox One S and the Xbox One X will do it when it comes out. And I believe the original Xbox One can as well, although Atmos titles are only on 4K titles right now, so that's not going to work on an Xbox One, but yeah, we'll put that aside for a moment. But those and LG TVs. So if you're using the built-in Netflix app on your LG OLED or your LG Super UHD LCD TV, I love that super ultra high definition. if you're using the built-in apps on those, you can get Atmos from Netflix. So you're saying, okay, the Xbox, that's a traditional source. That's the Xbox is plugged into my AV receiver. It's sending Atmos to my AV receiver. The AV receiver is passing the video to my TV. Nothing strange happened there. But on my LG TV, that means it's the built-in streaming app and Atmos audio is getting out of my TV to my AV receiver via the HDMI audio return channel. So is it possible to send Atmos over ARC? Yes. Is anybody doing it? Nobody except LG right now.
Okay, so let me take you into Richard's crazy scenario. And I don't think it's actually that crazy, because I think a lot of people are in this boat. I was until I got this new receiver that you recommended. So
sure. Well, on that last ARC tip, I want to mention Vizio has said they're planning a firmware update to add that same functionality to their TVs. So supposedly you'll be able to get Atmos from your built-in Netflix or Vudu app out of your Vizio TV into your AV receiver, but it hasn't happened just yet. That's forthcoming.
Okay. So Richard has an Xbox One S. He has an LG OLED, but he has a receiver that does Atmos, but it doesn't do 4K.
That's right.
So he's got his Xbox HDMI cable going straight to the TV and then using ARC back from the TV to the receiver to get sound.
Yup.
He's got all of these Dolby Atmos Blu-ray disc and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not getting Atmos out of it.
Nope. Because there's another wrinkle in this audio thing, which is lossless versus lossy.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So on your Ultra HD Blu-ray discs, you have a lossless version of Atmos, meaning that what was made at the studio, it gets data compressed using, in this case, Dolby True HD audio compression. And when that is decoded, you get back exactly bit for bit the exact same audio. Nothing was lost. It was just scrunched down for transmission, but what you get back is bit for bit identical to the original. When you're doing something like the Netflix version of Atmos, it's a lossy version. What they did is they took the original audio, they data compressed it down into a Dolby Digital Plus bitstream. But then when that gets decoded, it isn't bit for bit identical to the original. Some data got lost in there. That's so you can make a smaller file size. That's so you can send it down the bandwidth restrictions that do exist with the audio return channel. You know, I said, hey, they know they have more bandwidth than just vanilla Dolby Digital uses, but there's still a restriction in the total bandwidth. So they can't quite send the lossless version down back through the audio return channel. Now, this has been recognized, and that's why there's a new thing called EARC, the Enhanced Audio Return Channel, which has increased the bandwidth cap and would allow for lossless audio to be passed from the television to your AV receiver, but both will have to support EARC, which then really raises the question of why wouldn't you just plug your source into your receiver?
Right.
Really strange stuff, right? Yeah. Can you tell why sometimes people get confused and need to ask questions?
Yeah.
So, no kidding. In Richard's case, unfortunately, You can't take the lossless Atmos, the Dolby True HD with Atmos extensions on top of it that you find on an Ultra HD Blu-ray disc or a regular Blu-ray disc with Atmos audio, and send that down an audio return channel, just like you can't send it down an optical audio connection. The bandwidth just isn't there, unfortunately. And there's no way to tell it, turn this into a lossy Dolby Digital Plus version of Atmos. I mean, you can tell it to just send out Dolby Digital 5.1. That's right. Still there. But then if that's all he was doing, he could send that directly to his AV receiver, although then he couldn't pass the HDR video through. Right. So, yeah, Richard's in a bit of a pickle. And
so I thought I had a clever solution to this. Sure, and I want you to tell me if this is going to work or not. I have a feeling the answer is no. So my thought was, I thought back to some of the nicer Ultra HD Blu-ray players have two HDMI outs.
Yes.
One to go to your TV and one to go to your receiver, I think, to handle this sort of situation, I think. So my thought was, can you just put a splitter on there and send the video to the TV and the audio to the receiver? But I have a feeling it's not going to work, is it?
So the answer would be maybe, because occasionally that does work, but there's an issue. So you're starting with your source, your Xbox One S. You want to send 4K HDR video and lossless Atmos audio. Those are the two things you want to send out of this thing. And you want to connect it to two. So they call that the source device. And then whatever you're connecting it to, they call the sync device.
Okay.
So you have two sync devices in this instance. You have a television and an AV receiver. And they're sending their data back to the source saying, here's what I can handle. And the source looks at that and goes, okay, that's what the sync device can handle. So here's what I'm going to send out. Now, we already know in the scenario where Richard takes his Xbox One S, plugs it into his AV receiver, then plugs his AV receiver's output into his television. In that signal chain, he gets the message on his Xbox One S, you can't send 4K HDR video. Right. There's this thing in the middle that's stopping that from happening. Right. And if he connects it to the TV first and then from the TV to the AV receiver, he can't send the lossless audio that way. The pathway doesn't work in that signal chain. So if the data is being sent from the AV receiver saying, I can't handle 4K HDR video, you can only send me 1080p and you can only send me HDCP 1.4 copy protection, I can't handle HDCP 2.2 copy protection. If that data is being sent to the Xbox One S, it's going to say, well, one of these devices can handle 4K HDR, but the other can't. So guess what I'm going to send? Lowest common denominator. I say maybe because there are a handful of AV receivers out there that don't send the data. Oh. You end up with horrible situations there with garbled video that looks absolutely atrocious, but they don't send the data, so it doesn't stop the source from sending the signal, but it also doesn't work. So the solution that Richard is looking for, there's three. One, he could buy a new AV receiver. I hate to sort of say I told him so, because he did contact me beforehand and I suggested some very specific models and he didn't buy any of those. So unfortunately, this is where we end up. But he could buy a new AV receiver. Obviously, that would solve the issue. He could get an Oppo Ultra HD Blu-ray player, because those have an HDMI input and they actually just, we were actually wrong about this last night on AV Rant, because they just released a firmware update last week that on the Oppo Ultra HD Blu-ray player, you can plug an HDR10 source into the Oppo's input, because it has an input, and it'll pass HDR10 along and split out the audio to its second audio only HDMI output. So it's acting as a splitter, but it's not just strictly splitting the signal, it's actually extracting the audio out to a second output.
Right.
But if you have an Xbox One S, why would you buy a separate Ultra HD Blu-ray player?
Right.
Plus, it wouldn't work for Dolby Vision, because it can't pass that yet. It can pass HDR10, but it can't pass Dolby Vision yet. Oh, yes. So solution number three, the one that will actually work, is from a company called HD Fury, and they have a new device. Actually, it's $150 now instead of having to buy their old device that was $250. So, but it's $150 for a thing called the AVR Key. And this has one HDMI input and two HDMI outputs, and it does exactly what you want, which is it takes the 4K HDR video and sends that through, and then extracts the HDMI audio and sends that solely to your AV receiver. Now, the fact that they made this device and it exists and it costs $150 indicates that your standard $40 or $50 HDMI splitter probably won't get the job done.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, a $150 device is still a lot less expensive than a new receiver.
Yes.
So, because how much were those receivers that you originally recommended to him?
I was pretty sure, because he was saying you wanted to do Atmos. Mm-hmm. And my recommendation to everyone, if you want to do Atmos and you're going to be spending, you know, at least $500 anyway or something like that, what you really want is an AV receiver that can do at least 9 speakers. Mm-hmm. Because if your AV receiver tops out at 7 speakers, it means you can only have 2 speakers overhead. And then how do you move sounds forward and back when you only have 2 speakers overhead? There are no speakers to help you move sounds forward and back. And that's a lot of what Atmos is moving sounds forward, back, side to side, and around you as they go above you. So you really want 4 speakers up there. So 5.1.4 means a minimum of 9 speakers. And of course, if you want to go up to 7.1.4, so much the better. So then you have your surround backs behind you as well. So I was suggesting, you know, like at the time, I believe it was like Marantz's SR6010, because this was a little while ago. That's been replaced by the 6011, and now the 6012 is just coming out. So things move pretty quick. It's like every 8 months, there's new receivers. But I think I was pointing to him at a Marantz SR6010, if I remember correctly. Yeah, that was that.
And so how much would that new Marantz cost now?
Right, so it was around $700.
Oh, okay. That's still not as bad as I'd expected. Yeah. But that's still pricey.
Well, yeah, no, it's a big chunk of change, right? Yeah.
Well, and he has 7.1 now, so he would want the 7 plus the 4.
Plus 4, yeah. Right. Yeah. So right now... Accessories for Less, you mentioned them last week. That's where you got your AV receiver from. Mm-hmm. They have Denon's X4300H, which is basically their least expensive model that can do 11 speakers, 7.1.4. They have that right now for $700. And that's it doesn't do Dolby Vision right this second, but the firmware update is coming before the end of the year. Definitely passes HDR10 out of the box, will do HLG as well. 11 speakers, $700, right? But he already bought one. He already went and bought an AV receiver. So $700 on top of what he already bought, or $150 to make what he has work.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's a pretty easy one. So let's move on. Let's talk about home theater PCs. This is a space that we actually haven't been talking that much about lately. And I think partly because all of us, I think that's fairly safe to say, have been really excited about Ultra HD and 4K and HDR and all this stuff. And that's not been super easy to do on a computer of late, which is totally weird, right? Because when HD hit, like, your best way of doing HD was through a computer. And now the next big thing hits and it's like, how about a game console instead?
Yep.
So it is possible to do now, at least some of the things. Like, you can actually buy Ultra HD Blu-ray drives now, right?
Yes, you sure can.
And there's software to play them.
They're not super expensive. They're okay.
Okay, so we've got the drives, and I did a little bit of digging on this. It looks like you can get a drive that'll play back a UHD Blu-ray disc for like $120-ish.
Yeah. It's pretty much Pioneer at this point. SJ11 models. And they're in that range, but $120 to $150 for the most part. So the actual optical drive itself, you know, certainly not the cheapest thing ever, but it's not too terrible. That's okay. That's to actually be able to officially read the Ultra HD Blu-ray disc. Because some people found who already had BDXL drives that it could like read the disc and say, yes, there's data on here, but it won't actually play back the movie because it does need to be officially licensed to do that. So the overarching reason this has been so difficult is copy protection. They aren't super happy about people copying discs, right, and have tried to make it a lot more difficult with Ultra HD Blu-rays and have kind of succeeded up until right about now and into the at least foreseeable future for the next little while. So yeah, you're pretty limited on what you can get. So I mean, yeah, the whole idea of the home theater PC was one box that does everything, right? I don't want a dozen different sources. I want one source. That was the whole idea. But now that we've kind of, most of us have moved over to Windows 10, that's meant the end of Windows Media Center.
Right.
Doesn't exist in Windows 10. That meant we have to go look for a whole new interface. And now we're having to upgrade the hardware now. So this what I'm talking about is all about playing actual Ultra HD Blu-ray discs, the physical discs. You want to play them, but you want one box that can do it all. And you can. You're probably going to have to buy an entirely new PC and put it together yourself. So really your best resource for this, if you just want, hey, what are the parts that are for certain going to work, is to actually just hit up CyberLink, because they're making the only software that can play Ultra HD Blu-rays. So that's CyberLink's Power DVD. You do need to get the Ultra version or the, what do they call it? Power DVD Live, I think, or something like that. The subscription version. You pay yearly and they always give you the latest. So either the subscription one year by year or the Ultra version are necessary for Ultra HD Blu-ray playback. But they have the system requirements, which tells you what's going on, which is you need a seventh generation Intel Core processor. Actually needs to be a Core i5. Core i3s can't get the job done. So a Core i5 or 5, and it does need to be Kaby Lake or the forthcoming 8th generation processors. Mm-hmm. So new processor. The really restrictive part is the motherboard. That is like the most restrictive part out of all of this. And it doesn't make sense. like from a consumer standpoint, you're like, what on earth is going on? Because if you want to play an Ultra HD Blu-ray physical disc on a PC, you have to use the integrated Intel HD graphics. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, those came with the processor anyway, so not the end of the world. It has to be the Intel HD graphics 630 or Iris 640 graphics. But pretty much the only motherboards out there right now, and this is all the copy protection stuff, has to have an HDMI 2.0A port with HDCP 2.2. Has to have, now what is it? What is it? GSX or something? What is the whole like content restriction thingy that they put on there?
Yeah, I think I
might
you're
be moving
about
some letters around.
It's SGX, software guard extensions.
Yes. There you go. Super important. Right. On the copy protection side.
It's basically just more DRM on the hardware.
That's right. So pretty much the only motherboards for a little while that came out that had all that stuff were like really high-end gaming motherboards. All right. Gigabyte was the first one with them out there with their Gaming 8 and Gaming 9 series with the new Z270X chipset. And like one of those is a $500 motherboard.
What?
Okay. And you're like, okay, hold on a second. I'm going to buy a $500 gaming motherboard, but I'm not going to put a video card on it because
the only thing
that works is the integrated Intel graphics.
Right. I'm going to build this amazing new computer with a pretty robust processor, a pretty decent motherboard, and I can't use dedicated graphics. So I can't.
That's right.
I can't play like big name games on it because. Well,
no, I mean,
Intel graphics
can. It's just you'd have to have two HDMI or one DisplayPort and one HDMI connection, one of them coming from your dedicated graphics card for your games. But you have to switch over to the integrated graphics to watch your Ultra HD Blu-ray discs,
which is
a necessity.
Yeah,
especially if it's a $500 mobo. Like right. that's not what you're buying when all you want to do is watch a movie. So thankfully, thank goodness, because another thing is a lot of us have built HTPCs that are pretty small form factor, right? Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily want a big tower sitting next to our TV. We want a nice compact form factor that looks like a Blu-ray player or something, right? Mm-hmm. So thankfully, ASRock, they have their Fatality Z270 Gaming ITX motherboard. You can find it for around $125. Right. So that, thank goodness, it's kind of reasonable. Right. It has the latest chipset. And here's an important thing. Now, there's a link on the forums like, oh, we found some other motherboards that'll let you pass 4K. Yeah, but not HDR. So you do need the Z270 chipset or the forthcoming, what's the new one coming out? The 370 chipset? Because there was the 170, so now they're going 270 and now up to 370 for the eighth generation, right? So you really want a Z270 or the forthcoming Z370 chipset because those are the only ones that support HDR. Now, back to HDR, none of this supports Dolby Vision, all right? HDR 10 only up to this point. HDR 10 only. But there's no physical hardware reason why Dolby Vision can't work.
Right.
That would be a software update to power DVD. There's no copy protection or bandwidth or anything going on here to prevent Dolby Vision from working, but it would have to be updated. And there will probably be a charge to do that.
Right, because they have to pay Dolby for the license.
Because they have to pay the royalty. So maybe getting the Power DVD subscription thing is the safest way, because then you always have the latest version. Yeah, but it can be done. It can be done. There you go. There's a Pioneer optical drive. I would probably go for that ASRock ITX MOBO, because it's the only reasonably affordable one where I wouldn't feel silly not putting a dedicated graphics card into it. And right. Then a seventh or eighth generation Core i5 or higher processor. Not super cheap, but at least not completely out of the realm of reasonability for a device you might put together.
Right. So, and then in terms of other content, like streaming stuff, is the only streaming service available on PCs Netflix, and only through the Edge browser, if I remember correctly?
Well, they actually have a Windows app.
Right, but does it support HDR and all that?
Not yet, as far as I know.
Right.
Because Netflix has specifically said the only, on the audio side, the only things that support Atmos are the LG TVs and the Xbox Ones. No mention of the Windows app or any browser or anything like that yet.
I thought we covered it months ago. I thought there was a story. I probably should have went back and looked for it, but I thought we'd report on a story that said Netflix was going to do 4K streaming on PC.
Yeah.
But it had to be, all of this Intel stuff like we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it had to be in the Edge browser.
I'm kind of forgetting now because it's a mess. It's a
complete mess.
I couldn't give you a firm answer on what the current state of that is.
But there's no other services that even do 4K streaming on a PC, right?
I don't think so, because Vudu is pretty much the built-in devices only. Amazon, I'm not sure what Amazon is doing.
I don't think Amazon can do it either. So you're going to build this $1 million HD PC and it's only going to play your Blu-rays, and you're not going to build a game on it because,
well, you still could, but
dedicated graphics is a pain in the butt.
Yeah, you still could. You just have to switch inputs on your display and switch your graphics card output settings.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally reasonable.
Well, but hey, home theater PC folks are used to things being more complicated than we would like them to be. That's part and parcel of the HD PC world.
Unfortunately, yeah, that is very, very true. All right, Rob. So I think that covers 4K home theater PCs.
Yeah.
You had a couple of other things that I think you wanted to hit on quickly because
I did, yeah.
You're a big Plex user.
Yeah.
And So what are the other couple of things that you wanted to talk about here?
Yeah, so I don't want to bore people too much with this, but my whole thing was when I was using Windows Media Center with Windows 7, what I like to do was, if I'm backing up my Blu-rays, I just backed up the whole disc. At the time, I was using AnyDVD HD. I was taking it as an ISO, right? So I would just mount the ISO, and that would look like a physical disc to the computer. And then in Windows Media Center, I could have it work with ArcSoft's Total Media Theater. Mm-hmm. And then it would play exactly as though I had put a physical disc in there. And what I really liked was that worked for Blu-rays, it worked for 3D Blu-rays, and it worked for HD DVDs, which I still have a whole bunch of those and don't want to rebuy all of them if I don't have to, because why should I? They're still HD.
Yep.
So now that I've obviously transitioned over to Windows 10, I'm like, okay, I need an alternative. Plex, as you guys have come around to, is it's probably the nicest alternative. It's kind of simple to set up. The interface is nice and that. But I'm like, how do I get back my special features, right? Sometimes they download special features as part of it, right? You can get that thing with, include trailers, include special features, but it's not identical to what was on the disc.
Right.
How do I get 3D to work? Because it doesn't play back 3D ISOs, that's for darn sure, right? And it won't even play back 3D MKVs, right? So most of us now, if we're backing up our Blu-rays, we're doing it with Make MKV.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And I do recommend for anyone who hasn't been doing the thing of when you first put in the disc, don't open the disc right away. Instead, go up to the file menu and go to the backup selection there and just make a file folder backup of the entire disc. Because that way you never have to touch the physical disc again. Now your backup is just a file structure of the entire disc, copy protection included, which in Canada means it's legal. Because up here we said, if you have a backup that includes the copy protection, that's fine. You're allowed to back up stuff you already own. A little bit different in the States, but hey, yeah. I'm Canadian, so I can do what I like. so once you have that backup, you open it up, you make an MKV, but 3D MKVs don't play back in Plex. The special features, I can get an individual MKV of each special feature, right? You'll see them as titles on the disc there, but how do I, like, I can put that into Plex, but then they're all over the place and there's no images to go along with them and I'd have to manually rename them and all. How do I all get it, like, one title, the regular Blu-ray version, the 3D Blu-ray version, and all the extras under one heading under Plex? And it can totally be done. And this might be something everybody already knows how to do who's listening to this podcast, but maybe not. Maybe we'll help somebody. So first, they have a thing called local media assets. And I mean, they have their own thing in their help section, in Plex's help section, but it's nice to have the link and just go look at it, because all you really need to do there is activate local media assets in your Plex server and make sure that it's at the top of the list under the metadata agents, because then that's the first place Plex is going to look for extra data instead of going out to the web and pulling in content. It's going to, do you have any local media assets for like the poster or the background that you want to show instead of me pulling this down from the internet? So activate that, make it the first in the list under your agents. And then all you really need to, I don't really like, they have this method of doing it where you put in your own name and then a dash and then something like deleted or behind the scenes. And that'll work, but I'm like, why would you do that when you can just make a folder? Right? So right. You have your overall movies folder, you have name of the movie with the year after it as a folder. You throw your MKV in there, you throw your other version like theatrical and extended cut, they can both be in there in that one folder, and then you make another folder that's behind the scenes, deleted, trailers, all the other things that are listed there. They only specific names work, but you make those folders, and then you can put the MKVs of the special features that you backed up using Make MKV, you put them in those folders, and now you go into Plex. You have your one movie with its nice poster art and its background and all that kind of stuff, and it comes up there, and you have the play little button at the top there, because I'm using the Plex Media Player, of course, because that gives you the nice 10-foot interface. So you have the play button right at the top, but right below that, you have that little triple dot button, and that's where your different versions are. So if you have your theatrical cut and your extended cut and your 3D version that I'm going to talk about in a moment, that's where all your versions are. And then below that, there's this weird little like triangle thingy symbol that I hadn't seen until I started doing this, but that's your extras. All right, you click on there and all your extras are in there, and I'm like, oh, it's like having my disc back, you know. Right. they're not all over the place. It's like one movie and all the stuff related to that movie is here.
Yeah,
so it's fantastic. So I don't know, maybe I'm just a dummy for not having done that previously.
No, but I don't think so. That's that's out of the norm, because I would suspect that most people who are using Plex are using it similar to how I use it, which is, I don't care about all the extra stuff.
Mm.
I just want the movie. So yep. When I go to make MKV, I make one MKV, and
yeah,
that's the movie, and that's it. And you shove it in the folder, and everything's good, and everything is super simple. Now, what you're talking about here is a whole bunch of MKVs, because you've got an MKV for the different versions and all the extra music videos and all the other craziness that comes on these discs that I don't personally care about. You have to make all of those MKVs, which Make MKV will do for you, but it's some work.
And it'll make it all in one go, because you're just selecting multiple titles from that disc. So when you do open the disc and it shows you all the titles, instead of only selecting one as most people do, and typically it's the largest one, right? It's the only one that's 39 gigabytes or something.
Exactly.
Now you're selecting like all of them, because I mean, you don't know what they are ahead of time.
Nope.
So I just select all of them. It spits out like, you know, a dozen or 20 MKVs. And then I go through, and some of them are just like waves because it was a background image, or it's like the Japanese FBI warning, you know, like... That's what some of them are, but you delete those. That's okay. You'll live, you know?
So you still have to do all of the separate MKVs. Like, this isn't a way of making an ISO file or something like
No,
that.
You're not getting a single file. No, okay. Every single special feature is its own separate MKV, but you can just throw them all into one folder and they all show up as your extra features for that title. So now when you click on the poster for that title, you just have this weird three circles in a triangle icon. I don't know what that's supposed to represent, but apparently it means extras. So there it is.
So one last real quick thing to point out to everybody. If this is sounding like a lot and you're not sure about what the things are that Rob said to enable, it is all documented. And we've got a link to it because Rob gave it to me in the show notes. So if you want to do this, because I know a lot of our listeners do care about all those extra features and stuff.
Even if you only care about one, right? Like sometimes there's a really good documentary on the disc.
Oh yeah.
And you're like, I don't want to get rid of that. I'd like to be able to access that, but I don't necessarily want it to be its own completely separate title in my Plex library.
Yeah,
and I have to go hunting for it, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So this is great. This is really great. Thanks for finding this and for sharing it with us.
No worries. So yeah, the very last thing was I hinted at it, but 3D, because I do have my 3D library. I'm like, how do I get my 3D Blu-rays into my Plex library? How do I get them to play? So it won't play. So Make MKV can back up a 3D Blu-ray disc. It'll do that. It'll give you a 3D MKV, but you can't play that in Plex. It won't work. You have to convert it to a side-by-side version, or actually a half side-by-side version. Has to be converted. So this one, it's like, it's free, so why not do this? The only really good resource I found was on the Doom 9 forums, because they gave you all the links and all the description of what you need. You do need to first download and install AVI Synth. You don't have to do anything with it, right? It is like a command prompt thing, and you're like, this looks a little intimidating if you're not into that stuff, but you don't have to touch it. You just have to have it installed. And so it's a thing called BD3D to MK3D. And all of those are numerals, right? And the two is actually a numeral two. But yeah, BD3D to MK3D. And it's really nice, lightweight program. The interface is simple to understand. And so you do first start with Make MKV. You still make your 3D MKV backup because it can't just read directly off the disc. But once you have that, you open this BD3D to MK3D program. You switch it to the 3D MKV mode because there is a 3D Blu-ray mode, but it's kind of useless because if there's any copy protection, it doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So you switch it to the 3D MKV mode. That's fine. Now, everything's basically already there. The one hint I'll give is at the very end of it, it's a five-step process before you actually make the thing. And it's just tabs at the top and you're going through, clicking through next. And everything's pretty much good. Give it whatever file name you want. At the very end, it does have a compression setting. And by default, it'll turn a 40 gigabyte 3D MKV into like a 9 gigabyte 3D MKV. So first of all, it's cutting your resolution half because it's actually taking the left eye and the right eye and putting them side by side in a 1920 by 1080 image. So you're cutting the resolution in half already. Now, if you then compress the video from 40 gigabytes down to 9 gigabytes on top of that, comes out looking a little blurry. So lower the compression all the way down to zero because there's no reason why you can't. Unless you just need to save that disk space, but I'm all about trying to get the quality. And it does its thing. You click all the check boxes that say, yeah, mux automatically. Yes, convert it automatically. Just click all those tick boxes. There's no worry about it because why do stuff manually? And at the end of it, you get this side-by-side MKV file that if you play it in Plex, even on a 2D television, you have a side-by-side, like you see two images right there, literally side-by-side. But any 3D television, you can manually, if it doesn't recognize side-by-side automatically, you hit the 3D button and there will be a 3D side-by-side mode. Mm. And it works. It works.
That's
and so
great.
Now I can have my whole, because Make MKV works for HD DVDs too. And you can take the special features off of those. So my entire library can now reside in Plex. My 3D Blu-rays, my regular Blu-rays with their special features, and my HD DVDs. They can all be there. I don't need Windows Media Center anymore. It's quite satisfying.
Wow.
And lossless audio. If you're using the Plex Media Player, lossless audio, Bitstream, Atmos, DTS:X, it's all still there.
Yep. Yep. That's great. Does all of this work if you're using the Plex client on the Xbox One?
Let me see. Everything plays. They haven't updated that app to output Bitstream audio yet.
Okay.
It should be coming, right? Because we know the Xbox One can output Atmos audio bit streams now.
Right, right.
It clearly does that, but the Plex app for it isn't doing it yet.
Okay.
But that's just...
But you can still do your side-by-side 3D Blu-ray.
Yeah, because it is just a 1920 by 1080 image. It just happens to be two images put side-by-side. Right. It's you manually forcing your 3D TV into side-by-side mode that makes that work. So if you want to, you don't even need a 3D TV. You can just, I don't know, really quickly cover one eye. No, that still wouldn't work. It's not sequential. But
Yeah, it's probably not.
Yeah, everything else plays the Atmos audio, the DTS:X audio. Plex will just have to update the Xbox One Plex app, which I'm sure they'll do at some point because it's a software update. That's all that's needed
there. Right. Yeah. Maybe they'll do that when they've finished all the new UI stuff that they're working on.
Yeah. I mean, we know Netflix got Atmos working on the Xbox One, so it's not, you know, the hardware, it works. We know it's a software update.
Cool. All right. Rob, you shared so much awesome stuff with us tonight.
I went way longer than I thought I would. I'm so sorry. No, every
you
time.
You were totally fine. And I know that all of this HTPC stuff is just building up inside of you. And you don't get a lot of time to talk about that sort of stuff on your show. So
that's right.
I'm glad that we got to get it out of you here because
it's fun to share
here that are using all of these same things and have been wondering how to do many of the things that you've just talked about. So that's great. That's really great. All right. So this is the part of the show where we talk about things that we've been watching or playing in terms of video games or other hardware stuff that we've been doing in our entertainment centers. Richard's not here, so he doesn't get to talk about what he's doing. I'm here. I'll start off so that if you've got to think a little bit about what you've been doing, that's cool. But I'll do what I've been doing, and then I'll turn it over to you if you want to talk about things that you've been watching or whatnot. So in terms of watching stuff, I watched some football, and because it's football season, whatever, and hockey season's about to start. Yay. So I'm excited about that, but there's not really any hockey to watch yet. So instead, when I was exhausted the other night, I started going through Plex and stuff and thought, hey, let's watch Logan. I don't know why I started watching Logan because I knew I was exhausted and was going to be going to bed. So I watched like 40 minutes of Logan, and that's not really enough time to evaluate any movie unless it's absolute garbage. And it's not. So
no, that's one you do need to watch through. It actually has themes and
right.
connective tissue, and the characters have arcs. So yes, not seeing it all the way through isn't the way to see it.
No, it's really not. So I need to go back and rewatch that because I am really interested in seeing that movie. In terms of gaming, NHL 18 came out this last weekend. So I spent a fair amount of time this weekend playing hockey on my Xbox, which is not surprising to anybody. Really loving that. I got a new, in terms of hardware, I got a new over-the-air antenna. This is a monoprice antenna. I don't know off the top of my head what the model number is. I'll put it in the show notes for our listeners, though. Because it was dirt cheap. A coworker of mine needed one. And he's like, I found this one and it's like $11 and it's supposed to have a 60-mile range. And mm-hmm. I said, I've got this Mohu Leaf that's supposed to do 50.
Yeah.
And it's not working out perfect for me.
Ah.
And this is dirt cheap and you know it's not Amazon, so you've got shipping to deal with. What if we just buy two of them and then split the shipping? And it came out to like $13. I'm like, let's do it. I'll pay $13 for an antenna.
All right.
It wasn't good. It didn't work out well for me at all. My coworker worked out fine for him. He is 8 miles from the towers. It's not like anything.
It should. Rabbit ears should work.
Right. Yeah. Right. For me, it wasn't better than the Mohu Leaf. So,
And I'm a little surprised the Mohu Leaf isn't working for you because those tend to be the highest rated of the over-the-air antennas as it is. I mean, the Sky is the one we always like to recommend, but that's expensive.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So, and I'm only, I don't know, 15 miles, maybe 20 miles.
Really?
Tops? Yeah, I'm not very far away.
Do you have a nuclear generator between you and your tower? I mean, those 15 miles, or
maybe. No, I don't think
somebody's
so.
Somebody's just out in their front yard with a microwave with the door ripped off, and it's just constantly microwaving their baked potato until the end of time.
Straight at my house, yeah. I'm not really sure what it is, so it's not that big of a deal, but it's a little bit annoying. So
yeah, no kidding.
So don't buy this monoprice antenna. Yeah, unfortunately. And then I've been talking a lot about, you know, my Plex server running on my NVIDIA Shield TV, and I've got some issues with it, and I can't really do the live TV stuff on it. And part of it is because I have the NVIDIA Shield TV box that only has 16 gigs of internal storage.
Mm-hmm.
And Android is kind of wonky, and Plex is a little bit wonky, and it needs protected places to write the buffer mm-hmm. to and all this stuff. It just doesn't really work. You need something else there. So I did some reading, and the recommended way is really just to get a big old micro SD card, slap it inside of the thing, format it as internal storage, and go.
Yeah.
I bought the card, but it didn't come until today. So I'll have more of that to talk about next week. So hopefully that's going to fix all of my Plex issues, but we'll find out next week. Hopefully.
All of them.
All of them.
Nothing else could possibly go wrong.
Nope, nothing could go wrong, obviously. But that's it for what I've been doing in my entertainment center.
Uh-huh.
Rob, what have you been watching or doing in yours?
Yeah, so I mean, since it's the summer, the television of the summer TVs sort of wound down. New stuff hasn't really started. Did check out The Orville. Was planning to watch the second episode last night, but I recorded on DVR and football ran long. Of course it ran long, and I forgot to extend the recording, so I didn't watch the second episode of The Orville yet.
Rob,
I don't know.
Football always goes long.
I know, and I usually remember, but I, you know, a series recorded and hadn't put the extra stuff in. Bad, I know. Bad HD TV guy. Should know this. This is not unknown. But yeah, I haven't really been checking out other shows. But the exciting thing has been my parents actually have a better TV than I do now, because they got an LG OLED.
Okay.
So I've been enjoying, you know, did a full calibration for them. You know, they've got a Vizio sound bar, so making sure that's all connected and working nicely. But that's really been my first proper exposure to HDR TV at home, because I've seen plenty of demos, but my television at home is 4K but not HDR, because I got one of the early ones, which still does passive 3D, which is why I'm having trouble letting it go. but yeah, watching, you know, HDR content over there, haven't had a ton of titles yet, but the thing that was kind of interesting was being in Canada, prices up here for discs are horrible. it's not just exchange rate. They always charge more for us poor Canadians. People are going to yell at me because why would I want to own Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, I actually really didn't hate nearly as much as everybody else. I kind of enjoyed that one. And Wonder Woman, I liked a lot. Mm-hmm. So there was the 4-pack, the DC Universe 4-pack that came out, $80 in the States, right? $20 a movie. So not too bad, you know, thinking about that. And I was like, so I saw that price and I was like, I wonder what it'll be in Canada. Probably $120, probably be $30 a movie up here. I was like, maybe $100 if we're lucky, but probably $120. Well, Best Buy had it exclusively in Canada, and they wanted $170 for it.
What?
Canadian, but $170. And I was like, wait a second. I can literally buy, if for some reason, they're $33, $32.99 Canadian individually. But I'm like, so I can buy them all for $135 individually, or for some reason pay you $170 to get them all in one tiny little cardboard box? Ridiculous. How does that make any sense? So I was actually tweeting about this and included Best Buy Canada in the tweet, and they dropped the price to $110. So
it was
like,
you did it. It was because of you.
I have no idea, but I'm going to take credit, because the price went down like the next day after that whole tweet storm. So like, that's totally me. I am completely taking credit for that. So I went ahead and ordered it, because I was like,
Three
out of those four movies I actually really wouldn't mind to have. And, you know, the fourth one, the interesting thing about Batman versus Superman is it is mastered to 4,000 nits. So it's a good test. It's a good test. Do you see all the detail when you're looking at Ben Affleck's white shirt when the Flash is coming to him from the future? Can you see every last wrinkle in his shirt? Because if you can't, it's not tone mapping it right. It's a great test scene. So that's my justification for now owning Batman versus Superman on Ultra HD. But aside from that, I wanted to say I haven't done this yet. I still might not, but it's really starting to formulate as something that I might do, which is we talked about Atmos, talked about Richard's setup having 9 speakers minimum. You go to 7.1.4, 11 speakers, and that's kind of where you top out if you're a normal everyday consumer and you don't have $25,000 to spend on one of the Atmos processors that can do more than 11 speakers. Well, Emotiva, first of all, at Cydia demonstrated their RMC1 processor, which can do 16 channels. That's inclusive of the subwoofer, but you could have 15 speakers and one subwoofer output. 9.1.6. So you can have your front wide speakers in there, 9 speakers around you at your ear level, and 6 speakers overhead, which is kind of the dream. But at $5,000, and it's Emotiva, so whether that will actually come out within the next 3 years is still a question mark, because when it comes to releasing processors, they are slow. but there is a way to take your 11 channel receiver and mess with the system to create. You could actually go all the way to 9.1.6. 7.1.6 is quite doable. It's just you need 3 receivers to do it. over on High Def Digest, Josh Zyber over there actually did this himself. So instead of me describing it, it's easier for you to read that. He calls it going beyond Atmos 7.1.4. And it's quite involved. There's some little catches in that you might not entirely expect. Things like if you have, say, Odyssey room correction and you run it, you're probably not going to be able to extrapolate the 6 overhead channels because the front and back need to be identical. Otherwise, you can't extract the center, the top middle, from them. So there's lots of things to consider if you want to go beyond 7.104. But that's really percolating in my mind from my teeny tiny apartment home theater. I'm like, I got 11 speakers. Why not 13? Why not 15? Why shouldn't I? I have the receivers on hand. Let's maybe make this happen.
Wow, that's a heck of a weekend project.
Yeah, it's a little involved, and it's a lot of speaker wire.
Hey, Rob, what you doing this weekend? Oh, setting up 47 speakers in my living room. No, doesn't everybody do this?
Getting there.
No, they don't, Rob. They don't. No one does this.
Just in case you wondered if I'm a little bit odd and geeky about home theater. In case there was some doubt after this episode.
Yeah, proving your credentials. Thank you for that. That is awesome. All right. Well, before we get out of here, I did want to toss out a couple more announcements for everybody. A reminder that Richard's going to be at the Smart Kitchen Summit. I don't have all the details on that in my head, so Richard can share those with you next time. I think it's next month, so you've got a few episodes of this before that happens anyway, I think, I hope. One thing you don't have much time, though, for is the... And I don't know what to call this anymore. It used to be called the Home Server Show Meetup. This is Dave McCabe's meetup in Indianapolis. It is, when you're hearing this, probably about a week away. It is September 30th in Indianapolis. Head over to the Home Server Show forums to register for it. It's only $20 to register. I'm going to be there. These meetups have been a lot of fun. And this is probably going to be the last one. So if you've been putting it off year after year thinking, oh, maybe next year, this is your last chance. Come to Indianapolis next weekend, meet all of the amazingly awesome people that'll be there. And unfortunately for you, I'll be there. So come check that out. It'll be a lot of fun for sure. And then I have one other shameless self-promotion thing here. As probably a lot of you know, I lost my mother to cancer about a month ago. And I'm also a huge Pittsburgh Penguins fan, which you all definitely know about. And how do the two of those mesh together? Well, it's actually really simple. Mario Lemieux, savior of the Penguins, he also got cancer a long, long time ago and beat it. And he created something called the Mario Lemieux Foundation. It is a cancer research organization. And every year for the last 5 years now, they have had a 6.6K, 6, 66. He was number 66.
Right.
Rob gets this. If you're not a hockey fan, I've told so many people, what 6.6? No, well, no one does a 6.6. It makes sense if you're a Penguins fan. Anyway, it's a race. It's a typical running race. Instead of a 5K, it's 6.6K. And if you're running in it, you can raise money for the charity, for the Mario Lemieux Foundation. I'm going to Pittsburgh next month to watch Penguins game. And then the next morning, Jen and I are both going to run in the 6.6K. So I have a link. If you would like to help out with that, you can donate to this cause as I will be trying not to die as this flatland Northwest Ohio boy has to run through very hilly Pittsburgh for 4.1 miles if you don't want to do the metric conversion math. So I will have a link to that if you'd like to donate also in the show notes. That event is happening October 15th. So you've got about a month, a little less than a month if you want to check that out. And I would really, really appreciate that. So Rob, before we get into all of our contact information, if people want to find you on your podcast or Twitter or anything like that, how would people find you on the internet?
For sure. So AV Rant, you can find us at avrant.com. That's our website. So if you want to send questions to us, it's just our email, question@avrant.com. So that's by far the best way to get in touch with us. If you actually want to be on my podcast and hear me geek out on whatever it is you'd like to ask about home theater or AV, that's the way to do that. But if you just want to reach me, probably the easiest is on Twitter. I am at First Reflect. So that's FirstReflect. And yes, that is a little bit of an audio related thing because there are things called first reflections, reflections off of your walls. So that's where I derived that name.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, if you want to find us, I'm at Josh Pollard Richard. Even though he's not here this week, he's still on Twitter at Richard Gunther. And our website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook, where you can like our page over at facebook.com/thedmz. We also like to promote our other podcast, Richard's Got Home On, covering all the latest home automation news. His Cydia episode, I'm going to bet, is going to be out around the time that this episode is out, but I don't know. Maybe he likes to do a production when he's on a plane and he's traveling. So maybe it will be. Who knows? And then my other show is called Story Players. It's brand new. We're covering video games from, covering them like you would cover a TV show, where we talk about the plot of a story. They're very narrative heavy games. And we have one episode out for Life is Strange Before the Storm, but we're also releasing weekly episodes where we play through Mass Effect Andromeda, and we'll be releasing the third episode of that, well, the day after this comes out. So go and check out Story Players right here at the Digital Media Zone. And then for Entertainment 2.0, guys, we record this show live. There's video, there's audio, and there's a chat room, which means you can participate in the show. And it is a lot of fun for us and for you, I think. That's why people keep coming back. We do that Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, usually, not every week. It wasn't tonight. But so follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we'll be live. You can also just subscribe to us in Mixer.com, which is where we're doing this live stream. And you'll be notified as soon as we start broadcasting. So you never have to miss a live episode of Entertainment 2.0. Rob, thank you so much for joining me tonight. It is always such a pleasure to have you on the show. You're a ton of fun. I mean, you're just an awesome dude, but you're also so incredibly knowledgeable in so many places. So thank you for being here and sharing all of that knowledge with all of our listeners.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me back, Josh. And I wanted to let everyone know, Richard actually was here the whole time. I just didn't let him speak. That's that's just what I do. That's how it goes down. I'm like, you stay quiet, Richard. I really like Richard. I love Home On. It's one of my favorite podcasts for sure. That stuff I don't know like next to anything about, so it's super informative to me. And I really want to congratulate you on Story Players. Like I say, I would love to play more video games. I just can't find the time. Mass Effect Andromeda is one of the games I definitely can't find the time to play. I'm really enjoying listening to you talking about it, going through it in sort of the event, because I'm like, oh, I kind of get to experience this game rather than just reading somebody's review of it telling me it's a really good game, you should play. I'm like, I would if I could, but
if
now
I
get to sort of
30 hours.
Yeah, right? I can sort of live vicariously and have it doled out to me. So congrats on that, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. You were even one of the beta testers of this.
That's
show,
right. So. And I don't know. Yeah. I feel like I had some impact on the show.
You had a major impact.
That might just be conceded on my part, but I feel like some notes were taken. So
they were absolutely taken. You were very, very helpful there. You helped me in so many ways, Rob. All the time.
Just a love fest around here.
All right. Well, that's enough love fest for this episode of Entertainment 2.0. That'll do it for episode 422. I was joined this week by Rob H. and I'm Josh Pollard. Thank you for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.